from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where on the occasion of my 100th show with Media Broadcast Center, I'm delighted about it. I'm very, very pleased to have as my special featured guest, Major General Albert Stubblebein, retired U.S. Army, who is an expert on Army and military intelligence. His career spanned 32 years. He was responsible for reorganizing the intelligence of the U.S. Army, and he and I are going to discuss photographs related to the crash sites of the planes that are alleged to have crashed on 9/11. General, welcome to The Real Deal.
Well, thank you very, very much. I'm delighted to be here this evening, and I think we've got a very exciting topic to discuss, because there are many, many differences between what has been said officially and what appears to be, or we know is, not the same story. So, lots of fun.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. I'm so pleased to have you here. We're going to begin with a 5-minute clip that takes us back to the events of 9/11. Everyone hold your hat. It'll bring it all back in a rush. Let's watch this clip, Chance.
No second flight. It was a bomb. Bombed another building, not second plane. That was a bomb. Who said the second plane?
That's what we're told, the second plane.
No,
we saw it on television.
No, everything.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. This is...
...idea of how much of the plane actually impacted the building.
You know, it might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon. The only site is the actual side of the building that's crashed in, and as I said, the only pieces left that you can see are small enough that you could pick up in your hand. There are no large tail sections, wing sections, a fuselage, nothing like that anywhere around, which would indicate that the entire plane crashed into the side of the Pentagon and then caused the side to collapse. Now, even though if you look at the pictures of the Pentagon, you see that the floors have all collapsed. That didn't happen immediately. It wasn't until almost about 45 minutes later that the structure was weakened enough that all of the floors collapsed.
Jeff, it's a United Airlines plane. It's believed to be at that site outside Pittsburgh, isn't it?
That's exactly right, John, with 45 people total on board. And one of the more profound things today, the imprint of terrorism seared not only on Wall Street, but also on Main Street. Here you have an area 80 miles to the southeast of Pittsburgh, and this plane, which went down at about 10 o'clock this morning. We have rescue vehicles that came in earlier in the day, and they have turned up nothing. No one believed to be alive from this crash. Some of the media just getting back to the scene, which is about a quarter of a mile up on a hill back behind me, and so some of the first pictures just starting to come in within the last hour. I want to get quickly to Chris Kanicki. He's a photographer with the Pittsburgh affiliate, a Fox affiliate. He was back there just a couple of minutes ago, and Chris, I've seen the pictures. It looks like there's nothing there except for a hole in the ground.
Basically, that's right. The only thing you could see from where we were was a big gouge in the earth and some broken trees. We could see some people working, walking around in the area, but from where we could see, there wasn't much left.
Any large pieces of debris at all?
No, there was nothing that you could distinguish that a plane had crashed there.
Smoke, fire?
Nothing. It was absolutely quiet. It was actually very quiet. Nothing going on down there, no smoke, no fire, just a couple of people walking around. They looked like part of the NTSB crew walking around looking at the pieces.
How big would you say that hole was?
From my estimates, I would guess it was probably about 20 to 15 feet long and probably about 10 feet long or 10 feet wide.
What could you see on the ground, if anything, other than dirt and ash? And
you couldn't see anything. You could just see dirt, ash, and people walking around, broken trees.
Oakland says that City Hall in Oakland will remain open. It will be business as usual. He is urging people to remain calm with given what is going on, remain calm. Oakland City Hall will remain open, but in San Francisco, City Hall has been closed. We're also just getting word here now that a second United Airlines jet, Flight 175, from Boston to Los Angeles is now missing. Again, if you're just joining us, there have been four separate plane crashes. Three of those planes were en route to California. Two were heading to LAX. The third was heading to San Francisco International Airport.
That was specifically the one heading to SFO, United Flight Number 93 from Newark to SFO. It apparently crashed in Pennsylvania, fairly close to the border of Maryland and not too far from Camp David. Why is that significant? Because one of the groups possibly claiming responsibility for all these terrorist attacks is the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine. And it was this week in 1978 that the Camp David Accords were reached. Is there a connection? At this point, we don't know, but it is important to be aware of that situation. In Washington, D.C., many congressional leaders have been transferred to a secret location. Some senators have described this as a second Pearl Harbor. And President Bush was in Florida this morning, but he made a brief announcement when the first attacks were clear on the World Trade Center, and he was heading back to Washington, D.C. At this point, we don't know exactly where he is. They're not really broadcasting that information, but we are told that the president is safe right now.
We're waiting for a press conference to start in San Francisco from the Office of Emergency Services to discuss what the situation, what the city's reaction to all of this is going to be. But again, right now in San Francisco.
General, that was a brief revisit to the scene in New York, in Shanksville, at the Pentagon. We'll be revisiting some of what was seen there in the slides, where we'll begin with the very first, which shows the reported flight routes of the four aircraft that are said to have crashed on 9/11. Notice American Flight 11 and United Flight 175 both originated at Logan Airport, where 11 is supposed to have hit the North Tower, 175 the South. United 93 originated from Newark and would wind up ostensibly in the ground in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And finally, and in many ways most interestingly, we have American Flight 77 out of Washington that makes its way to the border of Ohio and Kentucky and then officially turns around to strike the Pentagon. It's all rather fascinating. Does anything hit you about the official trajectories right off the bat?
Well, one of the very interesting things is that all of these airplanes suddenly were doing this damage. And let me tell you something. In order to do what was done, with the precision that it was done, you have to have experts playing the game. And I've got to go back because theoretically, all of this planning was done by our friends in the Arab countries. So, here is an incredibly coordinated attack, okay, at multiple places, in multiple, and many of them are quite distance apart. All of them were controlled or were managed and caused to make the destruction that they did by people who don't have control of the airplanes normally don't have my sense is they don't have the complexity to pull all of these things off simultaneously in the same event. And look at the distances between them. I mean, the Pentagon is not right next door to New York City. Shanksville is not right next door to anything. So how do, you know, the question comes up, how do these foreign persons get control of this entire set and cause all of the damage? My answer, I don't think it's possible. I mean, it may be potentially possible, but the reality, come on already.
I think those are astute observations, General, because, of course, this was supposed to be the handiwork of 19 Islamic terrorists under the control of a guy in a cave off in Afghanistan, which among its other features is among the most technically and scientifically impoverished of all the nations in the world. And the very idea that they would have individuals who had the background, training, and skills to perform these feats is indeed a stretch right off the bat.
Right. And there's another piece of it. Suddenly, we've got pilots who are they the real pilots? Or are they the pilots from the Arabian countries? Who are the pilots in all of these airplanes that are doing all of this? And, oh, by the way, what makes you think that the real pilot of each one of these airplanes is going to cooperate?
Yes. I mean,
who says that all four of the pilots are going to obey the instructions that theoretically they're given to go do this job? And if they know they're going to die anyway, why would they agree?
At the American Scholars Conference held in June of 2006 in Los Angeles, I observed that it seemed to me if passengers aboard these planes were confronted with hijackers with box cutters, they would have beaten them to death with their luggage.
Yeah, the answer is yes. I mean, so the terrorists are holding somebody hostage? There's a whole airplane full of people who are going to be passive? Come on already.
Another oddity is of the 19 alleged hijackers, 15 were from Saudi Arabia. The number from Iraq was zero, and yet the Bush-Cheney administration proceeded to invade Afghanistan first, yet but after a two-year delay, invade Iraq. I have a report that at one point Rumsfeld was asked why they were attacking Iraq, and he said because it was a target-rich environment.
A target-rich environment, meaning the oil?
No, meaning there were lots of targets in Iraq.
Oh, I thought you meant maybe it was really about oil.
Oh, yeah, well, that's very astute. Very astute. Let's turn to four of the only five frames the Pentagon has ever released of the alleged hit there. Notice, by the way, the two planes, 11 and 175, that are supposed to have hit New York were supposed to be Boeing 176 aircraft. The two in Shanksville in the Pentagon, Boeing 157 aircraft. Here are four of the five frames that were ever released from the Pentagon, General. I'm sure you've taken a look at these previously.
You can't find them anymore.
Really? They're taken down?
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, what do you see here?
Well, first of all, the airplane that is the theoretical airplane that is supposed to be coming, the picture is just before it strikes, has been manipulated to look like an airplane. And when you take the manipulation off, you suddenly don't have an airplane. You get a missile. You know, just take the camouflage off. all of the redoctoring, if you will, of the pixels in the picture. When you remove all of the manipulation of the picture, you suddenly don't have an airplane. You've got a missile. I mean, that's for openers, okay?
Yes.
Now, these four pictures here, look at the amount of fire in frame number three, counting frame number one on the upper left, two, three, four.
Yes.
Look at the amount of fire that's there. When you looked at the Pentagon, did you see that much fire? I mean, the results of that much fire? My answer is, I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree completely.
I don't believe the fire that is in that picture left the evidence of the fire that of a real fire that would have been should have been if that picture were real, there would be much more evidence of burned areas than existed in the pictures as you saw them later.
Yes. Do you suspect, as I do, that the fireballs were, you know, a fabrication? You look at the date time stamp, General. The date time stamp is the wrong day. It's the following day, and it's the wrong time.
I didn't know that. But I look at that fire and the missile and the fire, and I say, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, just my gut tells me that's not the real result of the hitting of the Pentagon, because I've seen the hole in the Pentagon. There is no evidence of that kind of fire.
Yes, I agree. Let's take a closer look at what purports to be the plane, according to the official account in the next slide. I had a friend, General, size the image of a Boeing 757 to what we see there just above the gate mechanism. I have had other pilots and aeronautical engineers observe to me that the white plume could be from a missile, but not from a plane, because that would have been black exhaust. But when he sized the image of a 757 to what we see there, it's more than twice the size.
Well, there's another very interesting aspect of that picture. Take a look at the height of the airplane, the height of the building, the Pentagon, and remember that the hole was well below that level. And the plane is flying how fast?
Over 500 miles an hour.
Ah, and it's going to dip down all the way almost to the ground
in a fraction of a second.
Huh?
In a fraction of a second.
Fraction of a second, yeah. Do you believe that?
No, of course I do not. Your point's an excellent point.
That airplane in that position looks just about like it's going to land on the roof. I mean, that's where it's headed, to the roof.
Well, remember now, the one above, of course, is the one that was added to the image to create the contrast. We have a slide. Let's look at the next slide that shows what the government claims happened. Here it is, General. You got a Boeing 757 that's supposed to be presumably the same plane now approaching the building. And notice with the engines hanging down, it should have been plowing enormous furrows in the ground.
Well, and as I recall, there was only, somebody did a critique of one of the shows that I had put on, or one of the presentations. And he was very upset because I had stated that there was only, there were no two wing marks and that should have shown on the wall of the Pentagon, because the nose penetrated far enough to get the wings into the wall. Okay? So he commented that I was wrong, because just as the plane approached the Pentagon, it tipped to the left. In other words, the left wing went down, hit the ground, and broke off. And so it wasn't possible to have two wing marks. I said, yeah, but don't most airplanes have two wings? I don't believe I've ever flown an airplane with only one wing.
Well, if he had been correct about it tilting down, then the plane would have cartwheeled across the lawn and would have been quite a mess, as we're going to see. The lawn remains perfectly clear and green and unblemished. Let's look at the very next slide, General. This is the purported hit point. It's about 10 feet high, 16 or 17 feet wide. There's a chain link fence there, two automobiles, a couple of enormous spools of cable. There are unbroken windows surrounding the hit point, General. What are your reflections on this, the hit point?
Where's the hole?
There's a little hole there, but what I don't see is the massive pile of aluminum debris from a 100-man airliner.
Where's all of the debris?
Right. Where's
all of the rest of the airplane?
I agree.
Well, the airplane allegedly disappeared. I'm not quite sure how it did that, but theoretically I've heard reports that it just sort of evaporated.
General, it's absurd, because they combined the claim that the plane evaporated, which would have been physically impossible, with a claim that they had debris and conducted DNA results on the passengers. They recovered bodies. I mean, you can't have that both ways.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely right. I mean, the hole in the Pentagon leaves so many questions unanswered to be the official story that you almost have to laugh at the clowns that made up the story to make it the official story, because it's absurd.
It is absurd. Here's a wonderful photograph. This is among my favorites from the Pentagon, General, where the civilian lime green fire trucks are already extinguishing the modest fires. And notice the Pentagon lawn. Where are the wings? Where is the tail? Where are the bodies? Where are the seats? Where are the luggage?
Where are any of the debris? There is no debris. There was no debris. I mean, it's crazy as a hoot owl, because there's no way that you can have that kind of plane was real, if that was a real attack, there is no way that lawn could look like that after the explosion.
I completely agree. And there are a lot of photographs like this. Here's another that the BBC used when they interviewed me about the Pentagon attack. I mean, there again, you see the perfectly clear green lawn with no debris at all.
None, zero. And the airplane is, where is this airplane?
Thierry Masson put together an early slide set about the Pentagon entitled "Where's the Boeing?" paralleling the commercial "Where's the Beef?"
Yep. Well, when you look at the when you know what the debris should look like, and there is none, and then you learn that one of the things that the first thing that they did in the emergency repair was to go out and put new sod down.
Yes.
I mean, we're going to put new sod down before we take care of bodies. We're going to put new sod down before we take care of the damage that's being done. And where's the fire? A little bit of smoke, not much fire.
That's right. And no debris from a 100-ton aircraft. Here's a before and after when that part of the building collapsed about 45 minutes later. It didn't collapse initially, but it did subsequently. And there, and then the next image is perhaps even better because it's from further out. You can see what happened, General, but again, where's the plane? This actually is from Where's the Boeing series that Thierry Masson produced.
Yeah, I mean, this story that it evaporated or just kind of disappeared didn't make any sense the first time I heard it. And the more that you look at the or begin to analyze the whole, the picture, the long, all of the pieces, it sort of cancels itself on the truth line. You know, it's supposed to be tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And what I've got is lie upon lie upon lie, and evidence of the lies. And so how do I become a believer?
I think the next slide exemplifies your concerns about the massive fireballs, General, because I look and look and look. I see no signs of an immense fireball here. You look up about the third or fourth floor on the left, and you can see there's a wooden stand that appears to be holding an Oxford Unabridged Dictionary. It's there intact. Shouldn't we see massive signs of that explosion we saw in those frames that have disappeared from the internet?
Well, maybe it was made that was made out of a non-burning substance.
Which would have to be other than paper and cloth.
Think of paper that won't burn. I mean, with that kind of heat, won't burn. Right. Mm-hmm.
Here's another image, rather interesting, because debris does start to show up. And here are a couple of fellows who seem to be interested in getting some out there. Isn't that bizarre?
Well, they're a little bit late in getting the debris out. And, oh, by the way, is that enough? Is that enough debris?
I think that's right. I think that's right.
Yeah.
Look at this next slide, General. This is a particularly interesting piece of debris. It does come from a Boeing 757, but if you look at it, it doesn't show the kind of damage you'd expect from a violent collision or an intense fire. And if you look in the lower right corner, there's a piece of vine that is entangled in the piece of debris where this particular item has been traced back to a crash in Cali, Colombia in 1995, General, where a Boeing 757 crashed into the side of a mountain while passing through a jungle where these vines are indigenous.
And in
1995.
Oh, my God.
In Cali, Colombia.
That incidentally, that's new. I hadn't seen that one before.
That was traced back by an attorney from James Hansen from Columbus, Ohio, General. There are very few accidents involving 757s, and he was able to figure out where this had come from.
My goodness gracious. Oh, am I glad to see that. Am I glad to be here, because that piece of evidence right there says, okay, folks, what kind of game are you playing?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Now the next photograph shows Captain Stephen O'Brien, who was flying a C-130 that was circling the building, General. I suggested to the BBC that debris had been dropped from the C-130. It would have been too awkward to have enlisted men and officers carry it out onto the lawn, even though we've seen a couple of individuals in suits bring out what appeared to be a couple of pieces. So when the BBC asked Captain O'Brien about this, he simply said it was absurd. He didn't say it was false. He just said it was absurd.
Well, it is absurd considering the what's going on and the game that's being played. The whole thing is really absurd. And
He was claiming my suggestion that the debris had been dropped from the plane he was piloting was absurd, but I can't find any other source, General.
Well, maybe his answer was absurd.
Here's something I'm sure you've seen before. In the sea rig, this very round hole, and they had the smell of cordite. You can't see in the circled area. It says, punch out, General. Punch out is sprayed on the wall.
You kidding?
No.
That I hadn't seen.
This is supposed to be from a landing gear, which would have landed at an angle and created an asymmetrical opening, but instead it's perfectly circular and appears to have been done with standard military explosives.
And where is this hole?
This is in the sea ring.
Oh.
Yeah, so this is supposed to be deep inside the Pentagon. Of course, we have the E-ring external, and then the D, and then the C.
No, I understand now. I was confused as to where this hole was, but I understand totally now. And we went through and didn't do any more damage than that. I mean, we got this perfectly round hole.
Well, this was supposed to be from a landing gear or something such that created a perfectly round hole, but I'm sure you agree hitting, you know, at an angle, it would have created something that was asymmetrical. It would have been more oblong and odd shaped.
No way that could be that symmetrical. I mean, what's the probability of that? You know, minus what?
Very, very low, very low. Now, a couple of experts did a study of the damage to the supports underneath. They're good people, but they believe that it was consistent with a small aircraft having hit the building, but certainly not a Boeing 757. Others, of course, have endorsed the idea that it was a missile, which may very well have been somehow altered in that one frame to look more like an aircraft, but it's much too small, again, to be a 757.
Well, the picture that I saw and analyzed had a rotor in the on the ground,
right?
On the first floor,
right?
And theoretically, it was one of the engines from the airplane,
but it was too small.
The engine that was there on the ground did not match any possibility of being the engine from the airplane.
Yes.
It did, however. Now, incidentally, when I analyzed this, I was very careful to mention this rotor that was there, but I was also very careful to not name it by being from a missile. I just said it was there, and it did not match the engine from the airplane that theoretically hit the Pentagon, the 757.
Well, not even the engines, General, which you know are virtually indestructible, were recovered from the Pentagon.
Yeah, I know. But I wanted to be very careful that no one could come back and say, well, you lied or you made a mistake. I didn't want anybody to have that option, so I was very, very careful to not even come close to identification, just noted that it was there and it was not part of the airplane that was supposed to have been there, done the damage, and disappeared instantly.
Yes, yes, yes. The next slide is particularly interesting because it shows the official trajectory, the green line, General, where the plane is supposed to approach at over 500 miles an hour, low enough to take out a series of lampposts, where an aeronautical engineer published an article with me in which he explained that this was aerodynamically impossible, that that plane at that altitude, at that speed, could not get closer than 60 or even 80 feet to the ground because of the effect of what's known as downdraft, where 80 feet is higher than the Pentagon is tall.
I got to be a little bit careful here because I'm looking at all of this. I don't know the factual aspects of this.
Right.
But my gut says what I'm looking at is not possible.
I mean, now, those gold lines, General, from witnesses who realize right in the center of this slide, there's a Citgo gas station. And there were two students at 9/11 who realized there were witnesses who reported seeing a plane approach the building north of the Citgo station, which are reflected by the gold lines, whereas the official account has it approaching south of the Citgo station, the green line, and they saw what they took to be a Boeing 757 approach some 300 feet in the air, and when it was just a second from the Pentagon, it appears to have swerved over and flown over the Pentagon at the same time explosions were set off in front of the building.
Oh, wow. Well, let me go back to the lines that are on there, the green line and the yellow line.
Yes.
Having looked at it just a little bit longer, the trajectory of the green line goes in at a very sharp angle. What is that, a 45-degree angle?
Yes, that's a good guess, yes.
Pretty close to 45, maybe a little bit off, but pretty close to a 45-degree angle. However, the hole in the Pentagon was from a 90-degree hit. You know,
yes.
It was absolutely perpendicular to the wall.
Yes.
So the two stories do not make any sense at all.
That's very good. And if you notice the extension of the green line from the E ring to the D ring to the C ring, you see it ends where that hole was in the C ring that we looked at before.
No way that it would be circular like it like was shown. No way. Can't do it. Sorry.
I agree, General. I think that you're right on. Here next is a slide from Jamie McIntyre from CNN, who, when he was asked by his anchor about the crash, he said, well, from his close-up inspection, there was no indication that any large plane had crashed anywhere near the Pentagon. He was very clear about it.
Who was this?
Jamie McIntyre from CNN.
CNN. Well, let me tell you, Jamie was right. Because just looking at that 45-degree angle hit and knowing what the hole looks like makes, I mean, there's a lie all by itself. I mean, it refutes itself. You know, which is the truth, the 45 or the 90?
Yep. And look at all the photographs we have that are consistent with what Jamie McIntyre says, because we have no debris from an aircraft. So he was saying from his close-up inspection, there was no sign any large aircraft had crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Well, and he's absolutely correct. There's another interesting piece of the 45 degree. Can you imagine what a 45 degree hit in that wall would have done with the right wing?
Yes.
Where is the right wing mark from that 45 degree?
That's right. And of course, we know the facade of the Pentagon is soft limestone that would be very easy to create an impact or impression had a plane hit it.
Sure. I mean, I had never seen that analysis with the green and yellow lines. But I'll tell you what, the green line coming in like that says baloney.
That is the official trajectory, General. Here's another witness like Jamie McIntyre. April Gallup was a civilian employee, and it happened, the explosion took place in front of the Pentagon when she first touched her computer to turn it on. And there was a huge explosion, and she walked out through the hole in the front of the Pentagon, looked around, and saw no indication of any parts of any aircraft there.
Wow. Well, more and more, I mean, every piece of this just adds more truth to the lie.
It absolutely does.
You got a lie, and now you're getting the truth about the lie, and the lie is the official story.
That's right. We're getting more and more proof that refutes the official story.
Bingo.
Let's see the next slide here. Oh, this is April's story. She had brought her infant in that morning with her, General, and fortunately he wasn't harmed. She says, while I was carrying him out of the Pentagon, I didn't see any evidence of metal, airplane seats, luggage, nothing that would give me any indication that it was a plane that had hit the building. I did not have jet fuel over my body. My son didn't have jet fuel over his body, and the people I helped didn't have jet fuel on their bodies. So again, there was nothing that would give me indication that there was a plane that hit the building. In speaking with everyone who was in my area, no one else had seen any parts of the planes or luggage or baggage or anything of that nature. My goal is to push for a federal grand jury because the perpetrators will sacrifice our people like lambs to the slaughter. They should be brought to justice, and it is obvious that the official story has been fabricated.
I love it. I agree. Bless her heart.
Wonderful person. There's the next slide is about Barbara Olson, who was a well-known right-wing political commentator frequently on television, General. And the fact that she had allegedly been on the plane and that her husband, Ted Olson, who was a solicitor general of the United States, claimed that he had had repeated phone calls from her about what to do was used in the press to bolster the official account.
That's a new one also.
Here's the next slide.
Yeah, but just think the add-on of all of that to create the sense that the official story is a real story.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
He gave three different versions of her story. He claimed initially she called him on his cell phone, and when it was pointed out that at the speeds and altitudes involved, your cell phones would not work, then he claimed she had called using an airphone, General, but Boeing did not have any airphones in 757s in 2001. So he came back with yet a third story. This is a Solicitor General of the United States, the third ranking individual in the Department of Justice who argues cases on behalf of the administration in front of the Supreme Court, General.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, incidentally, all of this is brand new. I've never seen or heard of this particular aspect, but...
Well, it's my great pleasure to introduce you to it, General, and there's much more to come. This is from David Ray Griffin, who is a leading expert. He's published 10 books about 9/11. Olson supposedly quoting his wife, all passengers and flight personnel, including the pilots, were herded to the back of the plane by armed hijackers. The only weapons she mentioned were knives and cardboard cutters. Notes David Ray Griffin, Ph.D., Ted Olson's report was very important. The report that she had died in a plane that had been hijacked by Arab Muslims was an important factor in getting the nation's support for the Bush administration's war on terror. Ted Olson's report was important in still another way, being the sole source of the widely accepted idea that the hijackers had box cutters. The box cutter lie was to make the Muslims appear bloodthirsty, which was largely successful.
Holy smokes. You know what this is? Now, let me back off. When you begin to take this much evidence, I mean, it's just a pile upon pile upon pile of evidence, every one of them saying the official story is a lie. So now, what is the purpose of the official story? What is the purpose of this lie? Why are they doing that? What is the motivation that, I mean, at this stage of the game, you know it's a lie. So what's the motivation behind all of this? Well, another topic, isn't it?
Well, we can certainly dwell on it because it appears clear that it was to reverse American foreign policy from one in which we at least officially never attacked any nation that had not attacked us first, to one in which we became an aggressor nation and began attacking other nations that had not attacked us in the Middle East. And it appears principally for the benefit of Israel, we became engaged in a series of actions against modern Arab states that had served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the Middle East.
Well, that makes great sense. And I would add one more piece to it, because I think a huge amount of all of this was the oil that is there. I mean, there's a huge amount of oil. We are desperate to make sure that we keep the oil supply going and that all of our cars are going to be petroleum cars forever and ever and ever, which also makes the new innovations of the energy, the zero-point energy automobiles, try to make them irrelevant. But maybe I'm getting ahead of the game.
No, I think you're making excellent points. And, of course, Dick Cheney, our vice president, had just come from serving as chief executive officer of Halliburton, and he made sure that Halliburton got a whole lot of no-bid contracts to deal with Iraqi oil right off the bat.
Right off the bat. You got it.
Now, General, you mentioned smoke. As the next slide shows, this is really stunning. There was a report later in the morning that they were going to attack the Capitol. So members of the House and Senate came out on the steps, looked across the Potomac, and saw billowing black smoke. It occurred to me this was very odd because those lime green civilians' fire trucks had extinguished the very modest fires right off the bat. So I looked into where it had come from, and the smoke was coming from a series of enormous dumpsters in front of the Pentagon. It was a classic Hollywood-style special effect.
Well, that's a new, because I don't remember seeing the smoke.
Here's another slide, General. And here's yet another slide, General. When I was still living in Duluth, I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005, General, and I retired from the Duluth campus of the University of Minnesota after a 35-year career that June. But before I retired, another student of 9/11 came by. We had lunch together. He showed me 44 more frames where you could see the smoke coming from the dumpsters from a different angle, where you could see daylight between the dumpsters and the building.
Sure. Yeah, I see it. And look how far away it is from the hole.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
I mean, look at, it's very interesting because there's a tanker truck or a...
Yeah, that's a civilian lime green fire truck.
Okay, so here's the fire truck. Take a look where the back is. It's not, maybe 6 feet, 10 feet away from the smoke, if that.
Oh, easily, probably more because of perspective.
Yeah, but it's fairly close to the smoke. I mean, when you're looking at it in a measurement perspective.
Yes.
Then look where the nose of that vehicle is. And then I think the white thing is another vehicle, correct?
Yes.
Looks like it.
Yes, it is.
And so now I've got the two vehicles, and I'm still not at the hole. Now, I may be off simply because of the angle, but even with the angle, that fire is a long, long way from that hole.
Yes, yes. You're absolutely right. It had nothing to do with a purported crash. Nothing at all.
Nothing.
Here's a slide of someone you'll find familiar. I was very impressed. And you gave an interview to a German reporter about 9/11 and explained that you had studied the photographs and you knew that no plane had hit the Pentagon because there was no impact from the wings on the walls, the facade of the building.
You're right. I remember that. I'll just
tell you, General, you made a tremendous impression on me because of your long experience with the military. To be speaking the truth about this matter, I found completely admirable.
Well, I'll tell you that it was a hard decision to make to go public and tell what I knew was truth. And then I just could not keep that story to myself once I realized that what everybody was being pulled into this lie to give an excuse to the government to do whatever it was going to do. But here was this perpetration that killed people, okay? I mean, here is, we're killing people in order to make my story more livable, likable, and lovable. And I thought, I won't say that. You know what I'm going to say.
Yes. Well, I thought it was completely right that you should speak out. Let's turn to Shanksville, Pennsylvania, which, if anything, is even more obvious. Purports to be a photograph of the crash site, General. Do you see anything striking about it?
Yeah, it's too small.
and where is the plane, right?
For openers, that's for openers. Second of all, is that shadow? There's a sort of a dark shadow that actually looks a little bit like an airplane in it. So the real airplane is turned into a shadow in the dirt, right?
Yes. Here's another slide, General.
And then where's all the debris?
That's right. Look at the proportions here. Where is all the debris?
And if I'm not mistaken, that airplane looks upside down, doesn't it?
Oh, that's coming up, General. This is what the claim is for the official account. If you look at the next slide, the claim is the hijackers took control of the plane and they deliberately crashed it when the civilians tried to take over. And it nosed down here and completely disappeared, General. The explanation being this was supposed to be soft ground. It had been an area for use for mining. The claim was even made that the plane had disappeared into an abandoned mine shaft.
Oh, my God. Oh, you know, when you lie and then you caught up in the lie and you're asked about the lie, what do you need to do? You need to lie again. And then you add another lie to the lie that was the first lie. And you got to be careful that you remember which lie you told first. Because that sounds absolutely ridiculous. Incidentally, I hadn't heard this, but that makes zero sense. And you look at that, there's not a single piece of debris around anywhere. None.
That's right. In general, there were officially 45 individuals aboard the plane. We know what to do with miners trapped in mine shafts. We break out the bright lights and the heavy equipment and we dig 24/7 in the hope by some miracle someone will have survived. But they did not do that in this instance, even to recover the bodies, General.
That's because there weren't any.
That's right. Exactly right.
Why would I go digging when I know I'm not going to find anything?
That's right. Yeah. Here's the next slide of an interview with one of the reporters. The two reporters, first on the scene, General, both explained that the eerie aspect of the crash site was that there was no indication that any plane had crashed there.
Well, I see they are telling the truth. They went and looked. They couldn't find anything. They said, you know, I was sent out here to find this airplane. It didn't happen. It's not here. The airplane didn't make this hole in the ground.
The next slide shows what this reporter said. I'll read it. We're going to Chris Konicki. He's a photographer with the Pittsburgh Fox affiliate. He was back there just a couple of minutes ago. And Chris, I've seen the pictures. It looks like there's nothing there. except for a hole in the ground. Kanicki responds, that's right. The only thing you could see was a big gouge in the earth and some broken trees. The reporter pressed him further, any large parts? And he responded, no, nothing. Again, said the reporter, any smoke or fire? His response was, no, nothing. Then noted a local reporter on TV5 News, there were hundreds of investigators who found nothing larger than a phone book.
Yeah.
It may have even been a phone book, General.
Well, again, when you tell a lie, you got to be sure that you, A, remember what lie you told, and so you can go in and give the proof that everybody's going to be asking for, because no one could find the airplane.
That's right. Now, the next slide shows a photograph on the left taken by a woman by the name of Val McKechnie. And several students have observed that the smoke there looked more like a demolition in the middle than it did a plane crash site on the right. Not only that, General, but it appears to have been photoshopped, because when you trace the location of that smoke, it's over a pond, not over the alleged crash site.
I was going to say the scenery in the left-hand photograph where the red building is, I guess that's a barn.
Yes.
That photograph has got trees. It's got green. It's got trees in the background near the White House or the White Building. And then you look at the one on the right. There is no semblance or resemblance of that. Well, maybe because it was done from a different angle. Because
no. Look at the next photograph, General. The next photograph is sensational. This is an actual plane crash site.
Yeah, okay.
Compare that with what we had at Shanksville.
This is a real one.
Yeah, this is a real one.
Okay. Well, you now see the difference between what's real and what's lie.
It's completely ridiculous.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's no question that this one could be a real one, and that other is baloney. You know, I'd use a different that maybe starts with a B, but
also starts with a B. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, General, it's such a pleasure having you here. We're going to take a brief break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my special guest today discussing the crash sites from 9/11, Major General Albert Stubblebine, U.S. Army, retired. After this break, we'll be right back.
We can now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Less than 3% of you people read books, because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off and leave them off.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
My name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my special guest, Major General Albert Stubblebine, U.S. Army retired, continuing our conversation. General, I want to introduce you some documentary evidence that I suspect you've never encountered before. There was an Australian musician by the name of Gerard Holmgren who noticed right off the bat that for Flight 11, which allegedly hit the North Tower, the Bureau of Transportation Statistics had no record of its departure from Logan Airport. And in addition, there was no report for Flight 77 having taken off from Washington Dulles on 9/11 either, General. Neither of those planes appear to have actually been in the air. And get this, this will startle you too. I checked the FAA registration records, Chance, yes, and it turns out that Flight 11 and 77, which are supposed to have hit the North Tower in the south, were never really explained or deregistered properly. And more importantly, as the next slide shows, that Flight 93, Shanksville, and 175 were not reported as having been destroyed until September 28, 2005. So how can planes that weren't even in the air have crashed on 9/11? And how can planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later?
There's only one way to explain that. Remember that when you lie, you must remember all of the pieces of your lie and make sure that everything else around that lie matches the lie. Okay? I mean, that the only way that you can get through with a lie is to do that. These people did not do that because the lie is clear and the evidence is there to show that the lie is even bigger than we thought.
You're going to love this, General. Pilots for 9/11 Truth studied air ground communication. And based on that, they were able to determine that Flight 93 was still in the air over Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, after it had reportedly crashed in Shanksville.
Again, somebody forgot all of the pieces of the lie. Remember, this is an orchestrated event. And the orchestration is designed to make the population, the entire population, prepared for whatever is coming next, to get them scared, to get them on the alert, to get them to accept the next piece or the next lie. So all of that is the design of the lies that we've been hearing. However, when you lie, you better make sure that all of the pieces, not just some of the pieces of the lie, all of the pieces have got to match the lie. Otherwise, your lie gets revealed to be exactly what it is, and that is you're telling an untruth. You're telling a lie, and you just got caught.
Here's another piece of the puzzle, General. Pilots also confirmed that Flight 175, which allegedly hit the South Tower, was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, long after it was supposed to have collided with the South Tower.
Another piece of the lie that doesn't match the lie. And another piece of evidence that said, why are you doing this? What is this all about? Because you've killed people, you've hurt property, you've created this mess, and what for? Why are you doing this? And, oh, by the way, we know that you're lying because here's the evidence, blah, 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 blah.
When we go to New York, we discover that a French film crew known as the Naudet brothers just happened to be in the uniquely right position, General, to swing their camera up to capture the hit of what's supposed to be Flight 11 hitting the North Tower. Leslie Raphael, a Scottish student, has calculated that they had to satisfy over 100 improbable circumstances to be in exactly the right place at exactly the right time.
With their cameras pointing in exactly the right direction.
Yeah, that what's great about that, General, is the sound. You would hear the sound from the right, and you'd think you'd look at the plane, think it was the source of the sound, which it had been, but that was far beyond. They didn't look for the sound where they would have looked behind. They looked forward and caught it just as it hit the building.
And they didn't have any advance notice, right? Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's what we're told.
And they weren't planted there so that they could take their picture. Yeah, right.
You, okay. you want to hear a good one, General?
Yes.
Naudet Brothers is an anagram of Duane Street. They were on Duane Street, and they rearranged the letters of the street they were on to create the name Naudet Brothers. Here's what an actual Boeing 767 would have looked like had it hit the North Tower.
Wow.
But here's what we actually get from the Naudet brothers footage, General. Looks very, very different.
Wow.
I mean, very difficult to figure out what that is, as you're going to see here.
Well, you can't tell what that is. All you know.
I know. That's right. It's completely obscure.
Yep.
Now, here's what the Naudet brothers said when they were on Charlie Rose. As I am filming Chief Pfeiffer, they were out there ostensibly investigating the fire department, looking into a gas leak, General. I hear this roar that seems to be coming closer and closer above us. And I remember looking up and my camera right there. I look up. At that moment, he looks up with his eyes swung upward as if acting. And I see the plane going in between two buildings. I did very clearly see American Airlines big, and it's going extremely fast. I turned the camera to see where it was going to go after it appeared on the other side of the building and simply crashed into the tower. But as I observed before, when he hears the sound is coming from a location where the plane is no longer present. And here's what he captured in a time sequence, General. Look at this next series. One student has likened the images here to that of a flying pig. It doesn't look anything like a Boeing 767.
Actually, it looks like a corkscrew.
It does. It does. It looks a lot like a corkscrew. In general, here in the next, you see what happened. The hit point, when it first occurred, formed something like a Z, as you see on the left. But when the smoke cleared, it had turned into an elongated V. And in a slide we don't have here, they actually extended the right wing tip in a way that would have been preposterous given the design of the building. It's like they were creating a cartoon, a Wile E. Coyote cartoon, where Wile E. Coyote passes through an enormous boulder and he leaves an exact silhouette of his shape.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible, because the what should have been is totally different from the left-hand picture. I mean, you got a Z in the left-hand picture, you got a V in the right-hand picture. They don't match at all. Nothing.
That's right. They don't match at all. You're completely right. Here we go down now. We're going to look at the Flight 175 hitting the South Tower, where pilots analyzed the speed of the aircraft, which was purportedly over 500 miles an hour, General. They said that it was the max speed for a Boeing 767, but that's at the altitude of 35,000 feet, where the air is only one-third as dense, where John Lear, for example, our nation's most distinguished pilot, explained why it was aerodynamically impossible for a 757 to be traveling at that speed at 700 to 1,000 feet, where the air is three times thicker, because the turbines couldn't suck the air through the engines fast enough and they'd start functioning as brakes.
Wow. Incidentally, that's all new information for me. I'm familiar with some of the speeds, but what that says is it's impossible to do.
Yeah.
So another piece of the lie that becomes absolutely clear. And how do you fight this evidence? There's no way that you can make an excuse for the lie that is being told here. No way.
You're exactly right, and it gets even better. Now, here's a shot of the plane approaching the building at that speed that it would be impossible at this altitude. It's approaching the building, and there turn out to be a lot of witnesses who claim to have seen this plane approach the South Tower, General.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look at the next slide, and you'll see the problem. We have the plane disappearing into the building, General. Disappearing into the building. That's a massive 500,000-ton steel and concrete building. The plane is not breaking apart. It's just passing, disappearing into the building as though it were a gigantic stick of butter.
And where's all of the debris from the building that the airplane is broken up?
It never shows up, General, except for some planted pieces, I'll explain. Look at the next slide. This shows that plane at that angle was intersecting with eight different floors of the South Tower. Now, General, each of those floors consisted of a steel truss that was filled with 4 to 8 inches of concrete. The building was 208 feet on a side. That means each of those eight floors represented an acre of concrete on a steel truss. And yet the plane just effortlessly disappeared into the building.
So there was no airplane.
Very good, General. Now look, the claim has been made that because there were so many windows that the plane just disappeared into the glass. But look at the next image. It shows the windows were very, very narrow. And that was deliberate because they didn't want the sun to build up the heat inside the building to overstress the air conditioning unit.
Yeah.
So look at the next. This is a time sequence showing what actually happened here. You have this plane disappearing its entire length into the building in the same number of frames. It passed through its entire length in air, General, which means that this is a physical impossibility unless this massive steel and concrete building provides no more resistance to the trajectory of an aircraft in flight than air.
Well, obviously, there's something wrong with either the picture or the analysis. Because an airplane, if that's a real airplane and that's a real building, where's the debris? If that's not a real airplane and that's not a real building, what kind of photography manipulation are we playing? What kind of games are we playing to manipulate this thing to make that? What is that, a hologram?
Well, General, you're really anticipating where we're getting, because look at the next slide. It shows what actually should have happened. This is a simulation of how the plane should have been crumpled external to the building. A body, luggage, wings, tail, fallen to the ground, General. And I have a slide to show you where there's no debris, no tail, no bodies, no seats, no luggage beneath either of the purported crash sites on the north or the south tower.
And nobody, no individual down on the street got hit by anything.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. That's,
I mean,
absolutely
didn't
right.
Get
General.
Scared.
That's right.
Now, can you imagine yourself being down on the street and all of that debris coming down upon you? You probably don't even look. Well, you might have looked up because you thought you saw an airplane hit the side. But then all of this debris is coming down. What do? You drop everything and run, or do you just wait until it hits you?
General, I have observed that you could have been beneath the north or the south tower, the facades that were hit on 9/11, in a lounge chair, sipping Mai Tais, and you would have been perfectly safe.
I got it. So that picture was fake.
We'll get there, General, because there are different theories of how this was done. Here's the next, which showed the explosion of this massive fireball. Now, General, I'm convinced they originally intended to use drones for this purpose. Dov Zakheim, who was a controller of the Pentagon at the time, had a company that designed remote control devices for drones. And that it was only when they discovered it was physically impossible to get the drones all the way into the building before they exploded that they realized they had to find a way to fake it. They needed to get the plane all the way into the building before it exploded to have a pseudo explanation for the destruction of the towers based upon the intense heat from the jet fuel causing the steel to weaken or even melt. That turns out to be impossible anyway. But that was the plan, and where Americans are generally so scientifically naive and technically uninformed that they were going to believe whatever they were told by the mass media, which is how it played out.
Well, let me add another piece. When I look at those two smoke clouds or fireballs, they absolutely do not look real. There's a sense of puffiness that is not normal in a fireball. Look at the one on the left. It almost looks like there's a head and two arms. A right arm pointing down, left arm coming around across the chest. Looks like a skull just below the hand.
Very, very good, General. That's excellent.
And he actually looks like a little bit like an angel. Those look like angel wings behind him.
I love it.
And the one on the right looks like an ape looking up at the sky with a mustache.
Maybe King Kong climbing a World Trade Center.
I think so.
Look at the next. This is a photograph of the roadway beneath the towers.
Yeah.
No debris, General.
No debris. Well, it's like no debris in the hole in the ground, no debris in the Pentagon, so we've got the same situation, don't we?
We do. And get this. This is a fascinating story, General. The next slide. And a component of a Boeing 767 was found on the sidewalk, as you see it there on the right, behind the tape. Now, it's underneath a steel scaffolding, General, and it's sitting on an undamaged sidewalk. If something that massive at high velocity had hit the sidewalk, it would have done tremendous damage, but no damage is done.
I mean, the concrete would be splintered all over the place. How heavy is that piece of gear?
Quite massive.
Well, then there would be a hole. There would be a lot of broken cement. There would be a lot of debris running around. And there might even be some damage to the thing that hit the ground. I don't see any of that.
You're absolutely right. Not only that, but Jack White, who was a legendary photo and film analyst in relation to JFK, noticed in Fox News footage on the left that there was a white van at this intersection, and there were three or four men wearing FBI vests who were unloading something heavy.
Yeah. Now, did you say FBI?
FBI, General.
Oh, my goodness. And they unloaded this heavy object and just
at that intersection.
Oh, and
get this, General. It has the wrong air compressor ring on it. This is an old model 767 engine. It's not one that would have been in the aircraft that allegedly hit the building.
Well, it would have caused the airplane not to fly. So maybe it really was part of... No, I'm joking.
I know. I mean, a planted engine. Get this, General. More recently, they found a landing gear wedged between two buildings in New York, and would you believe that a piece of rope was still attached to it that had been used to help to guide it into position?
Oh, boy. See, again, I keep going back to this, and but it's interesting because when you tell a lie, you better have all of the pieces of the lie together. Otherwise, somebody is going to catch you in the piece that doesn't match. Well, the rope does not match. This piece of object that's on the concrete does not match the damage that should have been done when it dropped as far as it dropped. You know, how fast was it going when it hit the ground?
Oh, tremendous speed.
Tremendous speed. From that high, better believe it would
probably a couple hundred miles an hour, allegedly.
It would have hit with a huge force, and that pillar that's behind it, and the looks like a telephone. I'm not sure what the pole is on the left, but they would have been the one on the little one would have been shattered. The other one would have had a lot of damage. And the concrete underneath it would have been all over the place.
General, it's just astounding how Americans have been played for saps over 9/11. I mean, this is one of the most telling proofs that they planted an evidence. They had to fake it in order to establish a case for a Boeing 767 having hit the building, which, as you've already seen, was a clear violation of Newton's laws of motion. There would have been a tremendous resistance by this massive building to this aircraft. And, of course, we know that when aluminum impacts steel, the more dense material prevails over the less dense. It would be like flying an empty beer can into a brick wall.
You got it right. And you see that what you're enumerating here, or what you're demonstrating and recording officially, is this the structure of the lie, which is collapsing absolutely as if there's no way that you could keep this lie going with this kind of evidence. And yet, the U.S. government has not come forward and said, oh, well, it was not real, and we put this on, we faked it, and we did that because we wanted to take all of your freedoms away eventually.
That's right, because in addition to revising our foreign policy to engage these modern Arab states for the benefit of Israel to preserve its domination of the Middle East, we passed the Patriot Act, which gutted the Constitution, General, and has restricted our freedoms, which persist to this very day.
You got that right. And boy, let me tell you, if you don't think that doesn't bother me internally, having spent my entire life defending all of this, and then these clowns just give it away, give it away, give it away, and there are no more truths, there are no more freedom of speech is going down the tubes, the Constitution. Do we have a Constitution today?
It's a good question, General. We have one that's very tattered and torn.
Yeah, like ripped up.
We have three different theories of how the fakery was done, General. Here's the first. The suggestion has been made that it was done with computer-generated images. That's the first theory. In other words, there was nothing there to see, no plane. It only showed up when it was broadcast on television. And that's one theory of how it was done. Here is the second. It's called video compositing. There's like a 17-second delay between the time that video is taken and the time it's broadcast, which would have allowed them to add the image of an aircraft. But on either the computer-generated image or the video compositing hypothesis, there would have been no airplane for anyone to have seen before the broadcast. It would have first shown up only on the video broadcast, General.
I got that right. I get it. I understand.
So my argument has been, and here's the third theory, indeed you anticipated that it was actually a hologram, because we have hundreds of witnesses who report what they claim to have been a plane, but it was clear it was the image of a plane rather than a real plane.
Very, very interesting. And, oh boy, here we go. The lie gets bigger and bigger, doesn't it?
Now, there's a brilliant guy by the name of Richard Hall in the UK who did an analysis of the films from New York City, General. There were like 52 videos. He found like 27 were sufficiently precise that he could plot locations and times for the plane approaching the building. And when he did a study, he discovered there was a second study showing the same locations and times that had been done by the government, claiming it was based upon radar data, but what they cited didn't look right to him. He discovered, lo and behold, there was radar data for a plane approaching the building, but it was 1,200 feet to the right of the plane shown in the images, General. And he has therefore hypothesized that the real plane shown in the radar on the right was projecting the image on the left that the public was seeing that was flown into the building. And because it was only an image, it could pass through the building without crumpling or any hesitation. We did a frame-by-frame analysis, General. And the plane passes its whole length into the building, the same number of frames, in other words, at the same speed. It passes through its own length in air, which we know is a physical impossibility, but not for an image.
Oh, wow. Wow. Boy, that's a wake-up call.
And get this, General, you'll love this one, too. This is a page from about an airborne holographic projector that comes from what I believe is an Australian manual. The holographic projector displays a three-dimensional visual image in a desired location removed from the display generator. The projector can be used for psychological operations and strategic perception management. It is also useful for optical deception and cloaking, providing a momentary distraction when engaging an unsophisticated adversary. In this case, the unsophisticated adversary was the American public, General.
Yep. Got it.
This is so appalling because, look, as the next slide shows, here's the big picture. If no planes crashed, then no passengers died and no Islamic hijackers caused them to crash. And if no Islamic hijackers caused them to crash, then there was no warrant or any justification for the war on terror.
Unless you lie and have all of this, and they become the excuse to go to war.
Which appears to be exactly how it played out.
Yep.
They faked the events of 9/11, General, to induce us to go to war in the Middle East, which has cost trillions upon trillions of dollars from the American taxpayer. It's made trillions back for private companies like Halliburton, but it hasn't come back to the American treasury. So the trillions have gone out of the taxpayers' pocket and come back in the pockets of the private contractors.
And at the same time, we have taken the American people, the population, and we have caused them to be prepared for the next action, which will lead us to declare war on who? I mean, just think of what's happened to the people who have been listening to all of this garbage, and most of them, or a lot of them, believing the lies. Incidentally, I did in the beginning. I absolutely believe that the lies were true. Why? Because I believed in my government. I believed from my own service. I believed that my government would not do such a thing. And so I totally dismissed that as a possibility, not even a probability, not even a possibility. Okay? And then I discovered the lie. What does that do to your insides? What does that do to your trust? Incidentally, trust is a very, very critical word, because I trusted my government, and then I discovered that my government was the set of people that created this disaster and killed people in order to make it look real, and have not just done the Pentagon and the towers, but have continued to do other isolated actions that keep us on the edge, keep us alert, keep us worried, keep us fearful, and keep us quiet at the same time.
General, believe it or not, we now have a Defense Intelligence Agency document showing that they decided to allow the creation of ISIS in order to isolate Syria. ISIS has been supplied by the United States. The Iraqi army shot down 2 UK cargo planes providing supplies to ISIS. A week later, they shot down an American helicopter. 2 retired American generals are advising ISIS. In Washington, D.C., ISIS is known as John McCain's army. The Pentagon now knows the location of 60 different ISIS camps. They are attacking none of them, General. What they are doing is attacking the infrastructure of Syria to weaken the government of Assad.
And why? What has Syria got?
Well, it appears to be interfering with a pipeline that the Israelis want to build.
Oh. Interfering with the pipeline for what?
For Israel, General.
Oh, Israel's oil, is that right?
That's right.
Oh, that's a very interesting word, isn't it, oil?
Had you heard the the story that General Wesley Clark reported at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, how he when he returned from serving as Supreme Commander of Allied Forces Europe, which means a general in command of NATO, and returned to the Pentagon, he encountered another general who called him into his office and said, "Sir," he says, "we're planning to attack Iraq." And General Clark said, "Well, why?" He said, "Do they have something to do with 9/11? And the general said, "No, sir, they had nothing to do with 9/11. And he couldn't explain to Wesley Clark why this happened. Months later, Wesley Clark returned to the Pentagon. He saw the same general, and he asked him, he said, "Are we still planning to attack Iraq?" And the general called him into his office. He said, "Sir, it's much worse. I've just received this memorandum from the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, that we're planning to destabilize 7 different governments in the Middle East in the next 5 years, beginning with Iraq and Libya and ending with Syria and Iran." Jeez. And Wesley Clark was completely dumbfounded. He couldn't believe it. It took him years to come out with it. But you can find on YouTube today, General Wesley Clark explaining what he learned then from the Pentagon. In fact, he asked the general, he said, "Is that a classified document?" And the general said, "Yes." And Clark said, "Well, then don't show it to me, because I want to be able to talk about it." And eventually he did.
Well, bless his soul and bless his heart for having the strength to take it on and really analyze it and act on it. I think that's a very, very strong tribute to him. That's all news to me. I hadn't heard that. But think about what I had just got through saying about oil, 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 oil. You know? Why are we there? Why do we need oil when we've got zero? We've got free energy, for God's sakes. We don't need the oil. All we got to do is make up our minds that we're going to change and begin the change, because the change will take years, will take some time. But at the same time, we begin to not be dependent upon the oil, and we become free of the chain that really is the oil mastery. I'm sorry, but we have subjected ourselves to that, and we don't want to change. And the thing that it's all there. The technology is there. We do not need the oil today. We need to transfer, or we need the time to change over. But eventually, the oil ought to stay in the ground. And but the oil companies don't like that answer. They don't like.
As you well know, since Nixon took us off the gold standard, the value of the dollar has been its role in international commerce and in transfers and exchanges involving oil, which has led it to be known as the petrodollar. But yep. And it was nations that went off the petrodollar, General, Libya, Iraq, Iran, that has made them targets of the American military and our political wrath. It seems very clear that the connection has nothing to do, for example, with nuclear weapons in Iran. Our own intelligence agencies, all 16, General, in 2007, concluded that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons. That was a conclusion they reaffirmed in 2011. In 2012, even the Mossad reported to the Israeli government that Iran was not pursuing nuclear weapons, and yet 3 weeks later, Benjamin Netanyahu went to the United Nations and asserted precisely the opposite, General. I am simply appalled that we could have so many members of the Senate and the Congress generally opposing the Iran nuclear agreement that's been negotiated by France the United Kingdom, China, Russia, and the United States with Germany, with Iran, which is over a non-existent nuclear weapons program, General. The policy of Iran is nuclear energy for all, nuclear weapons for none. Iran has not attacked another nation since 1775, General.
Yeah. Oh, boy. And why are we doing this? Because we don't want to give up our control of the oil. We don't want to give up the dependency that we have on oil. And anybody who even thinks about the issue can understand that it's time to shift. It's time to make up our minds that we've got a different solution and start moving toward that solution. And eventually, we won't need any oil. Well, you might need a little bit of oil to put on your sunburn, but that's about it.
There have been developments in the Middle East here just in the past week or so, General, I'd like your reflections upon. Russia has sent 6 MiG 31s to Syria. They're providing pilots and lots of equipment where that plane is excellent as an air interceptor, and it appears to be designed to maintain Syrian airspace from these attacks by other nations, including the United States, that I have observed are being directed against the infrastructure of Syria. And in addition, Putin has sent 4 batteries of S-300 surface-to-air missiles to Iran, including a mix of refined versions where their S-400 is the best surface-to-air missile in the world.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. It's building.
I think, actually, these actions by Russia are going to bring stability to the Middle East, General, because it's going to be obvious that now that Russia has sided with Syria, it's no longer even remotely possible to bring down the Assad government. And where, although Israel has been contemplating the possibility of attacking Iran, where our own president has actually even threatened to shoot down their planes if they try to do it, the presence of these batteries of surface-to-air missiles makes that a virtual impossibility.
Mm. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Some of that is, you know, some of that I've known about. There are other pieces that you have just revealed that make it more important right at the moment. In other words, it's a beginning again of wake up as to what's really going on and paying more attention to each one of the actions that are about to take place in that arena. And, 'cause right now, my perception was that they weren't smooth, but they weren't up in arms either. It was kind of an alert status, but not a dangerous status.
I have a couple more developments to share with you. Because the Rothschild banking empire has been so desirous of getting into Muslim countries where it's contrary to the religion to extract interest on loans. When the first action of the rebel band that was involved in Libya was to declare a new central bank, I knew something was terribly, terribly wrong. And now, of course, we have the major nations of the world creating the BRICS international banking alternative to the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, where BRICS includes Brazil, Russia, China, India, and South Africa, and around 140 other countries are joining into the BRICS as an alternative to the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, General.
And it's all designed to do what to the United States dollar?
Well, to avoid reliance on the dollar, and get this, General, China has been unloading. You know, it has about a $1.5 trillion in American bonds. They devalued the yuan and then sold off a lot of bonds and bought them back more cheaply using the devalued yuan. Russia has been figuring out ways to work around the sanctions we imposed on Russia. And just this week, China declared that it's no longer going to trade exclusively in dollars because it's proven too difficult to maintain its trade relations with Russia given the U.S. sanctions. So I think these sanctions, which someone here in this country thought were a clever way to weaken Russia, has backfired.
Sounds like it. And my sense is that all of this money manipulation, the change in the values, the change in the importance of the various currencies is going to lead to a disaster. I just have a sense that that all means disaster on the horizon.
I think the dollar is going to become no longer the standard currency, and therefore its value is going to drop tremendously, General. It's no longer going to have that privileged status as the reserve currency for transactions in oil. It's going by the board. And Russia is creating a new trading zone with the former republics of the Soviet Union in which they cannot use dollars for transactions.
Oh, well, I hadn't heard that one. I underscore what you just said, that the dollar is heading into a pit somewhere and is not going to be worth anything. And that is very, very worrisome, obviously, for me, because, you know, my retirement will be of what, zero value?
I'm in the same boat, General. My retirement, I took my, you know, TIAA CREF as a university professor to which I'd been contributing for so many years and invested it in the stock market in a Charles Schwab account. And I'm very apprehensive as the value of stock drops, that the value of my retirement account may swiftly dwindle to virtually nothing.
Well, we're in the same boat, Jim.
Let me ask you this, General. It seems to me most Americans are completely unaware, but the sanctions that have been imposed upon Iran, like the sanctions that were imposed upon Iraq, are violations of Article 33 of the Geneva Conventions of 1949, which specifically states no individual may be punished for a crime they did not personally commit. These sanctions are a form of collective punishment. In the case of Iraq, they led to the death of 500,000 Iraqi infants. No telling what damage they're inflicting on Iran, but it seems to me outrageous that no one in the government whatsoever, no one on television, none of the commentators have ever observed that these sanctions on Iran are violations of international law. And under the Geneva Conventions, they qualify as war crimes.
Wow. I knew a little bit about that, but certainly not to the detail that you just described. But I'll tell you what, every bit of that is scary.
I agree, General.
Scary.
I agree, General, and the fact that you have a vast history of experience with American intelligence, to me, is very significant here. In fact, I really would like your reflections on everything we've been discussing related to 9/11 now and how it impacts your thinking about the present condition of the United States, its leadership, and its integrity.
Well, the first thing that happens is that You go from trusting, again, that word trusting your government, trusting the information that they transmit, actually trusting the press, because they're the sort of the medium by which a lot of it is distributed, you go from this trust position to doubt. And once doubt gets into your trust equation, then things begin to collapse around it. If you don't trust, then you're going to ask questions. Then you're going to analyze. Then you're going to say, whoa, what about this? What about that? And then you begin to add the pieces, just as we did today with all of the things that we've talked about here. We started with a small dent, a small hole, a small opening in the process. But by the time we got through, there was no doubt about 9/11. There's no doubt that our own government did it. It's no doubt that they have blamed everybody that they wanted to blame so that they could take advantage of that situation with the approval of the population. They have moved the entire sort of framework so that we have been manipulated into a totally different framework. And it's time to everybody listen to what we're saying and begin to take the actions of getting back to where we were, where we should be, and making sure that the government understands that the people are the ones in charge, that the people are saying, no, don't you dare, and the people are being listened to, and the Congress, the Senate, the whatever, and the people who are sort of taking us down this strange path back off and say, I don't think we ought to go there. I don't think we should do this. And the people then begin to make the decisions as to where we go and how we get there.
The part of the problem today appears to be we've become a total surveillance society, General. Admiral Poindexter, already in 2001, introduced what he called total information awareness. That sounded so Orwellian that they changed the name to terrorist information awareness. But the NSA is gathering information from every email, every phone call, every financial, every medical transaction we make. They even, it appears, want to do away with cash so they can monitor every single transaction or purpose we make, General. It's that bad, and it's getting worse.
I absolutely agree with you totally. And I also agree that what's in the future is going to be a lot worse. And
General, have you learned anything about this current military operation within the United States called Jade Helm?
Oh, Jade Helm is a disaster.
Can you tell me your thoughts about Jade Helm? Because I've been profoundly troubled by Jade Helm and what it may mean for the future of freedom and democracy in this country.
You should be. The Jade Helm is... Where do I believe we're going with Jade Helm? Martial law. When Jade Helm is over, and it's supposed to be over, I believe, this month.
15th September.
End of September, I believe that we will be faced with martial law. And at that stage of the game, all of the chips have been thrown in, because martial law will, where do you go with martial law? Agenda 21, Agenda 2030, where everybody becomes a slave.
General, how can we have allowed the creation of 300 FEMA camps all over the country? How can we have allowed the Department of Homeland Security to acquire 2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point ammunition, which is not even permissible in combat under the Hague Convention of 1899? How can the Pentagon have conducted a survey in 2012 of what percentage of the American military would be willing to fire on American citizens?
I understand totally. And all of those things, all of those pieces are part of the reason why martial law is headed. And oh, by the way, while I'm mentioning this, you really need to go to www.drrematruthreports.com. That's www.drrematruthreports.com. And you can sign up. You can see the evidence. You can ask questions. And you will get more truth than you've heard already tonight. And it would prepare you for what's coming, which is Agenda 21. You need to read what that takes, what's involved in that. You need to read about Agenda 2030, because that's worse, okay? And you need to be prepared, and you better start doing it now, because it's not very far away. The end of September, Jade Helm ends. Martial law, my guess, will be in.
Let's look at this one final slide I want to show, General, which is someone I greatly admire. For your speaking out the truth so much, General, given your past history, makes you an exceptional human being, a great patriot. And I just want to tell you how much I respect and admire you. I am tremendously impressed by your history, your background, your contributions to this nation. And I only wish that we had more good men like you in positions of responsibility in this country today.
Thank you very much. And I've got one more thing, two more things to say. First of all, I said September 30th when Jade Helm ends. Actually, it ends in the middle of September, I think September 15th. So you've got to be prepared. And look it up, because if you're not prepared, you're in trouble. And that means a whole different...
My fear, General, is that Obama's
way
gonna try
of dealing with things.
My fear is that Obama's going to try to use the United Nations Arms Trade Treaty to confiscate weapons from the American people. They aren't going to buy it, General. I predict if Obama tries to take our guns, there's going to be a bloodbath here, the likes of which this country has never seen.
Well, one of the things that Jade Helm was going to do was to pick up dissidents, okay, extract dissidents. That makes a very interesting question, because what is the definition of a dissident? And B, who decides who is a dissident and not? And so they're talking about picking up the dissidents. I can absolutely guarantee they'll also be picking up the weapons and the bullets.
General, I can't thank you enough for appearing with me here this evening. I admire you beyond words. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guest, Major General Albert Stubblebine, U.S. Army retired, for being here, and all of you for listening.
Thank you.